A company that survived the Great Depression may not make it through the Great Recession.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's officially called the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, and it's been around for 151 years. But today, the grocery store chain, more commonly known as A&P, is fighting to stay alive. The New Jersey-based company, which runs 395 grocery stores around the Northeast, has filed for bankruptcy. Marketplace's Janet Babin joins me now live in our New York studio to talk about it. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So first of all, it's just amazing that we are talking about an A&P bankruptcy. This is a company that has survived through a lot of the ups and downs of American history.
Exactly. Founded in 1859, so pre-Civil War.
Wow.
And it's one of the oldest stores in the country. It had its heyday in the 30s, survived the Depression, as you said. And that back then, it was the largest grocer in the country. In the 1970s, though, things started to go sour, and the company was sold to a German family. And it's known under a bunch of store names. Now you might know it as Pathmark, Walbaum's, Food Emporium.
So it was doing well for the early part of its history. What happened?
Well, the company blames its troubles on the economy and on increased competition. But David Livingston says the economy didn't have much to do with A&P's demise. He's a supermarket research analyst, and he's based in Milwaukee. And he told me this morning that A&P's been totally mismanaged since its sale.
The company just makes one mistake after another. One thing, they've got into a lot of real estate where they consistently pay above market rents. And everyone just scratches their head like, why do they pay such high rents when no one else pays those kind of rents?
Now, Livingston says the company does have prime locations that other supermarkets are likely to want to buy and convert into their own stores. Once they do buy, they're probably going to want to get those pricey rents down.
Get the rents down. Marketplace's Janet Babin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Senate is expected to vote today on President Obama's tax cut compromise. Included in that $861 billion tax and spending bill is about $3 billion in cash grants for renewable energy. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports on one big name in line for the money.
These Treasury Department cash grants are aimed at propping up large-scale solar and wind energy projects. That's why General Electric has been pushing hard for them. Morningstar analyst Daniel Holland.
If you see any of those big wind turbines that are out in the middle of a empty field, GE manufactures those, and you know, has a pretty big vested interest in making sure that the renewable energy is successful.
But GE doesn't just make and sell wind turbines. It bets heavily on clean energy through its financial services unit, too. So far, the company's invested $6 billion in green energy projects around the world. That includes 95 wind farms and 40 solar installations. GE says it's invested in a half dozen projects that wouldn't have gotten off the ground without the Fed's renewable energy grants. The program is due to expire this month, but the Senate tax bill would extend it one more year. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
While we're on the subject of GE, the company announced today it'll buy the British oil drilling pipe maker Wellstream for $1.3 billion. Now, let's do the numbers. Markets are higher right now in Europe and Asia. There was concern that China would raise interest rates after a report said inflation there surged to 5.1% in November, but no interest rate hike coming right away. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow jumped 40 points to close at 11,410.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the all-new Chevrolet Volt, available soon in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. The all-new Chevrolet Volt. It's more car than electric. And by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD, as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at AllyBank.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
We are less than 2 weeks away from Christmas. Sorry, I know that can be a stressful thing to hear when you still have shopping to do, especially if you have to buy something for little kids. What do you get for a two-year-old? Well, a growing number of parents say they've got a year-round solution, gift registries for kids. Sally Herships has the story.
I'm in Maplewood, New Jersey, about to hit a party.
Happy birthday to you.
It's for one-year-old Asher Friedland. He has an older sister, so his mom, Danielle, has lots of birthday experience. But this year, she tried something new, registering for gifts for both kids.
My daughter's 5. She doesn't tell me that much about her friends.
Friedland says picking out presents for other people's kids can be tough. Registries, she says, are convenient. So, are gift registries for kids tacky, or do they just have a bad rap? Time for another party.
Okay, can I take coats?
Birthday boy David Lavender is 2. His family lives in Brooklyn. While his mom, Nora, cooked lunch for the partygoers, she told me a registry could seem rude, but she likes the idea of being able to suggest presents.
We have limited funds, so the idea of like saying these are the kind of clothes we like has some appeal to it, although I didn't register for him. It's probably the tacky factor. Although I registered for my wedding, so I guess it's not that different.
Or is it? I'm still confused. So I asked Amy Dickinson. She writes the syndicated Ask Amy column.
In my view, the whole idea of registering for gifts for a one-year-old is cuckoo crazy.
Dickinson says a birthday for a young kid should be a family celebration, not a gift grab. And she says parents who register could miss out.
I'm a mother of 5, and I might want to give your one-year-old something that you haven't thought of.
But Asher's mom, Danielle Friedland, says she tried to make her kids' registries thoughtful, and she only gave out information if people asked. Well, at least there's one group who just doesn't care.
What did you get?
Cards, Spider-Man, Toy Story!
I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And finally, to the highest heights of stupidity. A store in Canada was broken into and robbed last week, and the owner is very confused because his store is called the Free Store and everything in it is free. Customers pay $2 to drop off stuff they don't want, and they can take anything they want for nothing. Well, luckily, the thieves were caught before they could, I don't know, steal all the ketchup packets from McDonald's or all the free cologne samples at Macy's. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
In China, what the government wants, the government takes.
Where can I live now? Nowhere. When they pull down my house, I'll camp outside the local officials' homes and live there.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Urban sprawl takes on a whole new meaning when the government takes your house. That story and the numbers next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.